Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Dori Shafrir, and along with Kate Spencer, I host Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. Join us every Wednesday with guests like author Phoebe Robinson, chef Samin Nosrat, actress Busy Phillips, and even former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. On Mondays and Fridays, we have mini episodes where we answer listeners' questions on everyday problems like how useful a butt mask really is, how to deal with a petty friend, or how to relax after a long day. So join us Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Forever 35, where we're not experts, but we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
So it's our bonus episode of Books of the Year with Robert Harris. Act of Oblivion is his book. You can find our chat with Robert exactly where you found this. You probably listened to it already, but Robert is still with us just to take... it's a slightly different questionnaire to the one he faced last time. So see previous Q&As for details. But the first question, Robert, the answers can change, so we're going to stick with this one. What is the last book that you really, really enjoyed?
I have read the Chips Channon Diaries, the third volume of this monumental production. It's about the size of Proust. I'm addicted to diaries and journals, letters, things that are just where people just speak directly to you and not mediated through historian or biographer. And I mean, he's a pretty repellent person, snobbish, anti-Semitic, ridiculous in many ways, but nevertheless you enter his world, the world of this Tory MP, and the diaries run from sort of the end of the First World War through to the late 1950s. He's homosexual. He has an affair with Terence Rattigan, the famous playwright. It's just a fascinating insight into politics at that time, high society, And this kind of gay culture, which is frankly thriving in a way that is remarkable when you consider it was punishable by imprisonment. Anyway, I really love that book, and it gives me enormous pleasure.
Robert, is there an idea in a book that you wish you'd come up with? So I think maybe it's a character, maybe it's a plot line, or even, you know, the location of the book itself. Is there one where you've been reading and you've thought, goodness me, I wish I'd come up with that?
Yes, because of this love I have for diaries, I'm very envious of William Boyd for having written Any Human Heart, the kind of dramatized or fictionalized diary, which sort of brings together all these sorts of diaries. There's a touch of Chips Channon in it, and Harold Nicholson, and all the great diarists. And he follows this character through his long life in a mock diary. And it's a great literary form, because if you can get a first-person narration right, that is my favourite form of writing, because every word, every sentence says something about the character, and everything is made up. And that is a book that I wish I could have thought of that first. But Will got there ahead of me.
Just as a sidebar question, Robert, why do you like the first-person narration so much?
It's... It's very economical. It's like taking a torch into a darkened building and just shining it on whatever thing that is relevant as you pass through the building. You don't have to bother describing everything else. You can just describe what is important for the narrative. That's one reason. And it was, for instance, very useful for me when I wrote my books about Cicero, that I could just describe this whole world from through one pair of eyes. So it's very useful. It means you can sort of, and you can address the reader directly. And sometimes in that trilogy, the narrator, Tiro, the slave, says, the next 2 years were boring, so I won't bother to describe those. and you can completely get away with that if you have first person. Also, you have the option to have an unreliable narrator so that the reader only at the very end realizes there's something a bit strange about this. And I did that in The Ghost, another book of mine, which was first person, narrated by the ghostwriter of an ex-prime minister. An Officer and a Spy, similarly, was first-person narration, the only book that I've ever written actually in the present tense, which I find very irritating usually. But if it's a first-person narration and it's supposed to be French, I think you can get away with it better first-person there.
Do you work best with deadlines, Robert?
Yes. I am obsessed by deadlines. I worked as a journalist. I was a columnist. If you're a columnist, and which I was on the Sunday Times and the Daily Telegraph, there is a space waiting set aside in the newspaper, which you have to fill by 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 7 o'clock in the evening if you're Boris Johnson, who used to drive all the editors in crazy by filing so late. And I realised that the columns that were best, the ones that sort of were most memorable insofar as they were the ones I had to make up, you know, like being pushed on to do a stand-up routine at a club. But, you know, you just have to rely on your wits. And actually in that adrenaline, fear, you see things more clearly and people respond. And so I think it's very good if you can write a novel and keep that sense of fear and keep that sense of adrenaline to enable you to see things which otherwise you wouldn't. And so I try to start a book in January and finish it in June. And that means I have to write, say, 15, 20,000 words a month, which is not an insuperable task. But you have to, you know, you can't afford to let it fall behind. And there's nothing more easy to put off than writing, be it writing a letter or certainly writing a book. And this way you can't put it off. You have to get up each day and do something. And I work 7 mornings a week, really. I'd stop at lunchtime. But this suits me. It's not a means of composition that would suit a lot of people, I know. Some writers say, I like to write the first draft, then I realise what the book's about, and then I start all over again. For me, that would be a nightmare.
When you're reading books, Robert, do you prefer short chapters or long chapters? There's a few books I'm reading at the moment, one of which I'm really enjoying, but I find myself that the chapters just race past, and I actually find myself thinking I'd really like more detail in that. What's your feeling on that?
It sort of depends, really, on the style of the book and what it's telling, what tale it's telling. Most of my books have chapters of about 3,000 words, something like that. And I like to finish a chapter a week if I can. And in the way that I work, I then show it to my editor so that I'm like Dickens doing a book in installments, really. So most of my novels have roughly that length of chapter, which seems to me about right. I don't write really short chapters. It's a bit like a sort of Chinese meal, isn't it? Sort of, you know, you're constantly, it's not very nourishing, really, I think. I think you need a decent length for a chapter.
Do you have a favourite TV or film adaptation of a book? It's the kind of thing that you might change your opinion on from year to year, maybe. But is there a TV or film adaptation, either of yours or maybe some other authors, that you would immediately think, yes, that's my favourite?
By and large, adaptations are not as good as the original source material. The rudest question I ever had, I was doing a charity event for schools in Afghanistan. Out of the goodness of my heart, I was being interviewed. by Clive Anderson, nice man. And he'd interviewed me, and then we took questions from the audience. And a man got up and he said, "Would the speaker agree with me that Enigma is a rare example where the film is better than the book?" Sat down. Even Clive Anderson said that was the rudest thing he'd ever heard. By and large, I don't think that adaptations are as good as the original source material. There are some exceptions. I mean, notably, I suppose, The Godfather, which isn't a bad novel, but its superlative quality is the acting and the direction of Coppola. I think that's probably The Godfather Part 1 and Part 2 are the best adaptations I can think of a work of literature off the top of my head.
How many books do you tend to get through, as in reading, a month, Robert? I know, speaking for myself at the moment, September is always really busy. I'm involved in judging the William Hill Sports Book of the Year Prize. And basically in September, I expect to get through at least 60 books. But for the rest of the year, it's probably closer to 10, maybe 20. How about you?
Well, I have to confess that quite often, especially if I'm doing a book a year, I simply swing from one immersion in a subject to another. So I've read literally dozens of books about the English Civil War and America in the 17th century. And before that, I read endless books about the V2 and the bombing of London in 1944-45. So my reading has become rather professional, if you like, over the last 20 years, 25 years. I used to read far more novels than I do now. I think partly because this is my business. I don't tend to read as many novels as I used to, or as I should, to be perfectly honest. I don't know why that is. I think partly because I'm now so busy in the fictional world that I can sort of see the joins too much. I can either be irritated by it or I can be bitterly envious of it. So I don't tend to read a lot of novels anymore, but I read more nonfiction, I would say. But that's to number, I couldn't really say. I've always got a book on the go of some sort. This summer I read A Gentleman in Moscow for the first time. That's a novel. I enjoyed that. Then I read Max Hastings' forthcoming book on the Cuban Missile Crisis, Abyss. Then I read the Chips Channon Diaries. I've always reading one book at a time. I'm not someone who can read two or three at a time, as I know some people do.
Recently, the final question, Robert. I had one of those if you had your time again kind of questions. And in the course of that conversation, I realised that if I had my time again, I'd quite like to go back to university and study linguistics rather than history, just because I find linguistics an absolutely fascinating conversation and a topic to look at. If you could go back to university, what would you study?
Well, I ended up reading English. I should probably have read history, but I don't regret reading English, not least because it was an easier degree than history, I think. I don't regret it because I've read a lot of history since, and I think if I'd been trained as a historian, I might have not had the nerve to take liberties with it as I do for a living. And also, it was a great thing to read works of fiction that you would never read again, to read things like Middle English, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, Revenge, Tragedy, lots of, it gave me a kind of grounding in writing and the way, the mechanics of how a page or a poem works that has been very useful to me throughout my life. And I wouldn't actually change it. I'm very glad I read English, and I'm a great defender of studying English literature. And I dislike this constant attack by politicians. It started certainly in the 70s with the Callaghan government, oddly enough, who said we want more scientists, we want more vocational degrees, and it goes on year after year, and we're having another wave of it at the moment. But I think the study of your literature or literature generally is a very enriching thing for a society and for individuals, and it's important. That's why we do the rest of it, so that the science and the the business so that people can study the arts, in my opinion.
Robert Harris's latest book is Act of Oblivion. You can hear Robert talk about Act of Oblivion in another podcast, exactly where you got this one. You may well have heard it already. And if you haven't read the book, you should, because it's absolutely magnificent. Robert, we appreciate your time as ever. Thank you very much indeed. We look forward to speaking to you when you've completed your next non-religious work.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Matt. I'm praying that's how it will be.
Amen.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Dori Shafrir, and along with Kate Spencer, I host Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. Join us every Wednesday with guests like author Phoebe Robinson, chef Samin Nosrat, actress Busy Phillips, and even former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. On Mondays and Fridays, we have mini episodes where we answer listeners' questions on everyday problems like how useful a butt mask really is, how to deal with a petty friend, or how to relax after a long day. So join us Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Forever 35, where we're not experts, but we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.